2005 with Mr. Herbert Marlowe, and I'm Chris Carta, interviewing him for the America's Wars Since 1941 class. So Mr. Marlowe, you grew up here in Newberry?
Grew up here in Newberry, and went to high school in Newberry. Mm-hmm. Graduated from Newberry High School. Then I went to work with, you want to tell as I understand it?
Sure, I was just trying to get the background from you. So you're here, when did you graduate high school?
Yeah, and then graduated in high school in 1939.
1939, okay, so that was before
everything started. And then I was drafted in the Army in 1942.
1942? What,
December of 1942.
Okay, so about a year after Pearl Harbor?
Yeah.
What was your reactions when Pearl Harbor happened? What was your feelings, your reactions on Pearl Harbor when that happened?
Oh, everybody was mad. Mm-hmm.
Were you ready?
Ready to go over there.
Were you in the same frame of mind? You were ready to go over there?
Yeah, it was the same frame of mind right then. But, I went to work for the government,
What did you do for the government?
I was a crane operator.
Okay.
And was building roads and airports, mm-hmm, for the military. And I worked with the government until I was drafted.
Okay. So you were doing your part for the war.
Effort
beforehand, and then you were drafted.
After this,
so
I was making $525 a week, and
that must have been really good.
And I went in the Army at $21.50 a month.
So you're making $525 a week working for the government,
yeah,
and then $21.50 a month for the Army, huh?
That's right.
That must have been a big shot.
A big come down.
So you were 19 when you went into the Army?
Yeah.
And then where did you do basic training?
I went to, I first drafted in Camp Landon.
Camp Landon, okay.
Florida, and stayed there until it was interrogated, and then we was shipped out to Fort Bragg, North Carolina.
Okay.
After, say, a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And I take my basic training in Fort Bragg, North Carolina. And they told us that, well, when we get through basic training, we'll let y'all go home. Mm-hmm. But they didn't.
That was the first of many promises, right?
And they shipped us out up to Shenango, Pennsylvania, I believe that's the name of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So when we was there, well, officers came around and wanted to know if anybody wanted to join the Air Corps.
Okay.
Well, everybody volunteered for it, you know. And none of us wanted the infantry or anything else to do with it, you know. So they come along and they picked me, along with about 25, 30 more boys, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what they thought about us, or, you know, whether it was our build or what.
Mm-hmm.
But they shipped us out then to New York. And I believe it was Camp Shanks, New York. Such a long time ago, I can't remember the name of the camp. But they told us then that they couldn't give us a furlough.
Mm-hmm.
And so they told us he went AWOL, and just so he got back by the next morning, well, he was all right.
You're okay.
So I went AWOL, first time I ever went AWOL. And I went into New York City, and I called my girlfriend at that time from New York City. And I was such a country boy that I didn't know how to use the telephone. And so I got one of the friends to call her, you know, that I could talk to her. And well, we spent that night there sightseeing in New York City. And next morning, we loaded up on the train and it carried us back into
the camp.
Camp, you know. And well, we loaded up. We got our barracks bags full of everything, you know, and we loaded up on the boat. And so I got about halfway up the gangplank, you know, and we had a traffic jam. And I had two bags, musette bags, both duffel bags.
Yes.
I had a strap to crawl on my back, and they give us an M1 rifle and a musette bag and everything. Got about halfway up the steps, and they stalled there. And I stayed there for, it seemed like forever, before it ever moved. Well, when we got out up on the deck, I hadn't had no sleep all night and night before. Well, I just dropped everything and fell down on the barracks bag and went to sleep. I heard the train, a boat whistle blow, you know, and it woke me up. So we went on to Casablanca, Africa. Got to Casablanca, well, we unloaded and we was betting what was going to be with it. Of course, there's a bunch of Air Corps guys on there, and there was the 82nd Airborne on the boat. And so we was wondering which one we were going to be with. They kept us all, 25 of us, and together, you know, and they kept us at Casablanca for about a week, and then they shipped us out to where the 82nd Airborne was.
So you were in the Army Air Corps, but you were attached to the 82nd?
Yeah, it was actually in the 82nd. It was airborne.
So you didn't go to jump school?
No, I didn't go to jump school.
Okay.
Well, they put me in the glider troops. So when we got there, where the 82nd was, well, this colonel come out and told us, he says, "We want to welcome you boys to the famous 82nd Airborne Division." And it says, "You're in the glider troops now." And they would say, "Glider troops? We had never heard of such a thing, you know." And he said to us, "Well, if you don't like it," he says, "we'll put you in the paratroopers." And all 25 of us raised our hands. "We want to join the paratroopers." And it made him mad. He said, "No, I've got to have troops too, so you're going to stay in the gliders."
Oh, man.
And so that's where we stayed. Well, our first glider flight, well, we went up on a training mission over Africa there. And
this was North Africa, right?
Yeah, North Africa. And, well, there was air pockets. Well, as long as you was over the land, well, you was going way up, you could look way down there and see the plane that's pulling you. Next time, you look way up there and you see the airplane, it was looking down, you know. It made everybody sick, you know. We got down, and that's where I'd asked the officers up there, if I refused to get on that plane that day, what could it do to me? He said, "Well, we can make you wish you had a gun in it." So I climbed in it along with the rest of them. Well, we had the invasion of Sicily. Well, we all got ready to go. And there was 23 planes that were shot down over paratroopers over Sicily. And they was to drop the paratroopers, and then they was come back and hook up to the gliders and carry them over there.
Now with the gliders, the paratroopers went in first? The
paratroopers went in first.
And then you came in with equipment, right?
And they'd come back with equipment, so with artillery and jeeps.
So you were having like mortars and jeeps?
Yeah, everything was a jeep. We were supposed to bring that in, you know. But, for the paratroopers, you know, to back them up. And, well, when they shot down 23 of them, well, they didn't have enough to come back and pick us up.
Mm-hmm.
So they loaded us up on the boat and carried us over there. Okay. So we got into Sicily. Well, it was just, the battle was just about over, so we got over there, taking 4 or 5
This
days.
Was on a Navy ship?
Yeah.
So you rode on a Navy ship a couple times, huh?
Yeah.
What'd you think about that?
And, well, then we stayed there and trained for, you know, General Taylor.
General Taylor? Okay.
He got with the underground in Italy and went up to as far as to Rome.
Mm-hmm.
And he was spying it out. And we, in the meantime, we had loaded up in the planes, ready to go to Rome. And he got back out side of Rome and radioed us and called it off. So told us that there was 16 divisions sitting in and around Rome, mm-hmm. just waiting for us. And we was one division there. And they'd annihilated us if we went on there, but he called it off and saved us that time.
So you were, what division were you under? Were you under the 502, or you weren't in the 502?
No, I was under the 320th.
The 320th?
320th glider.
320th glider. And you were a 320th glider, and you were a private at the time?
With the what?
A private.
Private, or, yes, okay. A private at the time. Same time. And, well, we made a, we jumped in to Italy,
mm-hmm.
at, I don't think of the name, Anzio, will be there.
Anzio, yep, Battle of Anzio.
And, we jumped in there, and then we was fighting on up and captured Naples.
Mm-hmm.
Captured Naples. Then we fought on up towards Rome, and then they called most all of the 82nd back to get on the boat to come to France.
Mm-hmm. So this was. This was everything leading up to the D-Day invasion.
Yeah, leading to the D-Day invasion.
So by this time, were you still 19, or were you 20 by this time?
20? No, I was close to 26.
But by this time, yeah. By the time all so the how much time transpired from where you trained in Fort Bragg?
Trained at Fort Bragg.
And that took a couple months.
Yeah.
And then you went up to New York for a couple more months. How long were you in Africa for?
Oh, we was in Africa. Oh, let's see. About 2 months.
2 months. Okay. And then you were in.
And in Sicily. And then we went into to Italy,
mm-hmm.
and then we came back and we went back out to, we thought we were coming home. We went way out towards New York.
Oh, really?
Everybody was betting it up. They was dodging the submarines.
Really?
Yeah. And they went nearly back to New York, and then they turned us around and carried us back to Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
North Ireland.
North Ireland.
And we landed there, and we was continued training. We got some new boys, you know, replacements and everything. Mm-hmm. We were replacing them. And then we went into the med and moved us over to England.
Okay.
And my girlfriend, my wife now, but she was a girlfriend then, she was a nurse in the Army.
Mm-hmm.
And she let me know where she was at, called her. So I hadn't had a pass ever since I'd been in the Army. So I went to the captain
Yeah, and had a pass since you went AWOL in New York City,
no,
right?
So I went AWOL in New York City. I went to see him, and the guard stopped me. They wouldn't let me see him, and I told him, I said, I want to see Captain Connect. That was the name. Mm-hmm. And he heard me, and so he told the guard to let me come up there at the hotel where we were at. I got there, and I told him, I says, Captain, I said, I've tried to be a good soldier to you. I says, in fact, the minutes I haven't had a pass since we've been in your outfit. And I says, I'm hoping you'll give me a pass, but if you don't, I'm going AWOL. And he looked at me and said, you'd really do that, wouldn't you? I said, I sure will. So he told me, he said, I'm going to give you a pass, Class A pass. Mm-hmm. He said, you can take it from Friday to Monday if you want it. And I said, I'll take that. So I started going up to the hospital to see her, and that's mm-hmm. when we got engaged, and he come back and encouraged me to go ahead and get married, you know.
And this was in
the captain.
Was this in Lancaster, you know? Was where it was, or
Lancaster.
I don't remember if it was Lancaster or
I think it was named
Or Lansdale?
Yeah.
I was
can't remember what the name was right now.
Okay.
Well, the invasion come on, time to go into Holland. I mean, to France.
To France. Now, how did the how was that? Building up. Like I knew in your book, you were. You'd already been in North Africa, Sicily, and Italy, and had you been in Belgium too?
No, I hadn't been in Belgium.
Yeah, but you'd already been in three.
I've been in three through combat.
Then. Yep. And what were your?
And when it well, I'm going to the second one right now. What I'm fixing to tell you.
Okay.
And we. Captain gave me a pass, and I went to see him, and we got engaged.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the meantime, they called us up to go to France,
mm-hmm.
to Normandy. Well, I loaded up with the rest of the boys in the gliders, and we went into France, and we fought for 33 days, and. They called us out and carried us back to England.
You were already in France for 33 days?
Yeah, I was in France for 33 days.
This was the Normandy invasion or before that?
The Normandy.
That was Normandy
invasion.
No.
We went in on the night of the 6th.
The night of the 6th, okay.
In gliders.
And you went in the gliders, so you went over. Yeah, while they were coming in on the beaches, were going further in.
Going behind the lines.
Behind the lines. What was that like? Was there like flak everywhere?
Oh yeah, flak flying everywhere. You could have walked, flying over the boats. Looked like you could have walked on one boat
right.
after the other. That going into there. And when we got there, well then, they carried us back to England,
mm-hmm.
and we never had been back to the same place where we went before.
Yeah.
And we got back to England, the captain told me, says, you've got your papers for you, you can get married if you wanted to. So I think I went up to Stafford on Avon, and that's where she was at.
Mm-hmm.
We made arrangements to get married, and we did, and it made all the newspapers, and even here in the United States.
Well, I bet.
It was unusual for a private to marry a second lieutenant.
Mm-hmm.
And, she made captain, and I made PFC.
Okay, so you did make PFC?
Yeah, I made PFC.
Right after the marriage?
Yeah. Okay. So we had a 2 weeks honeymoon, and they shipped her out to St. Mary Glace, just where I'd come out of mm-hmm. France. So shipped her there, and they loaded us up on September the 17th to go into Holland.
For Market Garden?
Go in, yeah.
For Normandy?
No, to go into Holland.
For Operation Market Garden?
Yeah, Operation Market
Garden. Now, if we can go back to Normandy just for a second. Now, what was Normandy? You were there for 33 days, so that must have been some pretty intense fighting.
Yeah,
for those 33 days. And any recollection on that, or anything that stood out in your mind about that? Because it seemed like in your book, when you guys left France, you kind of thought everything was winding down.
Yeah,
like was it?
I thought it was winding down. They were advancing. Patton had got over there, and he was going like wildfire.
And they had taken back France, so you guys had to felt pretty good.
Yeah.
And then, but at this time you've been in four battles after Normandy, so you were a private then, but then almost a PFC, so you had to have a quite a distinction among your peers.
Yeah. Let's see. I think I've been through three combats.
You've been through North Africa?
But I didn't fight.
Okay, you didn't fight there. Okay.
We got there just as it was ending in Africa.
Okay.
But I fought in Sicily, in Italy, and Normandy.
And then, okay, so it's just the time.
And they had told us that they expected 60% casualties out for the airborne.
For Normandy?
Yeah, and for the invasion.
Now, when you landed in Normandy, I know that from the paratroopers' side, so many of them got scattered on the drops there on their sticks. They got scattered everywhere.
Yeah.
Was it the same for the gliders? Were you all getting scattered all over?
They were pretty well scattered, pretty much. So.
So when
and
you.
What was so bad about it? They had telephone poles put up in every little field with about 5-acre tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And they come down in gliders, they hit them telephone poles and tore them all to pieces.
So what was your particular landing like on the night that you went into Normandy?
Well, the night I went in the army, well, we...
No, the night in Normandy?
Yeah, we went in to land there. Well, the pilot happened to pick a field that didn't have no poles sticking up in it, mm-hmm. So we made a perfect landing.
Really?
And other than when we hit the top of the trees, going in there, cool. But bounced off of them and couldn't sit down there. And when we hit the ground, well, the Germans had machine guns, and they were spraying us with in the glider.
As soon as you hit the ground?
As soon as we hit the ground, they were spraying us with that glider.
And what did you have in your glider on that particular flight? You had Jeeps and stuff in the back?
Or? I had a Jeep. I had the glider, and we had about six soldiers.
Six soldiers, and were you in charge of them? Or?
No. Sergeant was in charge.
Sergeant was in charge? Okay.
No, landed there. And we got together that night, some of us did, and they was about 3 days before we ever got all of our crew.
Everybody. So, if you don't mind me, what was your thoughts when, I guess Normandy wouldn't have been the first time, but the first time that you were shot at, pinned down by fire, what was going through your head?
Oh, I was scared, to tell you the truth. Mm-hmm. And anybody said they wouldn't, well, they all are.
Yeah.
Well, the more you, longer you was in combat, the more braver you got.
Yeah.
Or that goes,
It's just
you kind of learn how to take care of yourself a little bit,
Yeah, the veterans kind of stick together and know what's going on. Like in your book, it wasn't you, but it was, I think it may have been Jones that had said, he distanced himself from the new guys because they would show up with their clean uniforms and polished boots and everything, and they, you know, they didn't know, the guys that had been there for a while, like yourself, they kind of, you know, you didn't care as much about your uniform and everything because you knew what was really, what really mattered over there, which wasn't what you looked like, which is...
That's right. That's what it is. And,
did you, I'm sure you did. Did you lose any good friends over there?
Oh, yeah. I lost a very good friend. He was a Catholic boy. Well, we was all a company of us, so we was a radio man, a radio and telephone operator. And there was a crew of about 25 of us in communications. Well, when I went into Normandy, I had come back off of a pass, and I was, that was a Monday morning, and I had left my wife, and I wasn't my wife at that time. But, and that boy, he was a Catholic, and he dropped out of line. We was marching to get on the plane, train to go to the plane, and he jumped out and went back and got my equipment and hit me dressing it. And then we run back and caught up with the crowd, you know, it was good. And I got there, I wanted to write to my girlfriend, you know. And I asked him, did he get me any paper? And he said, no, but he said, what I got, I got. And he says, you can have it as soon as we land. I said, why do you say that? He said, well, I'm not coming back. I said, don't say that. His name was Velosky. I said, don't say that. I said, go in there with a positive attitude. He said, yeah, but I know I ain't coming back. Sure enough, he got killed on landing.
With you? You got killed?
He was not with me, but he was another glider.
In another glider, okay. And, so when did you find out that that happened to him? That, was it weeks after?
Very shortly.
Or very shortly?
Yeah, what happened to him. And he was also, I don't know whether he was in the bunch or not, but we had one old major that everybody hated him. He was so mean, you know. And so he was in the glider and went down, and there was, I don't know how many men that was in the same glider with him. And every one of them got killed except him, and he walked out without a scratch on him.
That was a major that no one liked, right?
No one liked.
Everybody really didn't like him after that, huh? I bet that was there, so, I was in the military, and I know there was guys that I definitely was not anywhere in the conditions that you were in, but, you know, on the ships and everything, there was definitely guys that, you know, we kind of wish would fall overboard or something like that, so...
Yeah.
Was there the same thing then? Was there definitely guys that you were hoping to take the point, so to speak?
Anyway, well, when we left after 2 weeks of honeymoon, we loaded up in the plane.
What did you do on your honeymoon? Because you couldn't really go too far. Right?
No, they had her restricted.
Okay.
And we could only go into town there, and. So we spent our honeymoon in a hotel and walked around. We down the town and everything like that, and sightseeing all we could see.
This was in where she was, the Avon. What did you call it? The town that she was in. The town that. What town did you have your honeymoon
she
in?
She was. We had a honeymoon. Her outfit was 130th General Hospital. And
and which city was that in again?
Oh, that was Stafford-on-Avon.
So that's where you had your honeymoon there.
Yeah.
So you had the distinction of marrying an officer and then having your honeymoon in the middle of a war.
Yeah.
Literally.
The middle of the war. And so she went on to France and this last September 17th. Well, we loaded up and went into Market Gardens. And the lead plane that was pulling my glider, it got shot down. And I supposed that the navigator hadn't been keeping up with where he was going, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they overshot the target. And I seen him when some of the gliders started circling to the right to land. And I told the officer, the pilot, I said, they're landing over there. And about that time, well, we started going over to German forest over there.
Mm-hmm.
And they supposed to have 10,000 anti-aircraft guns and tanks in that forest.
Hmm.
And they turned loose on us.
Oh, they did.
And there was 9 glider loads of us. And they just riddled those gliders going over. And we got across the forest over there where the pilots turned us loose. And instead of, we were begging them to carry us back to over there, you know, for getting what a rest of the outfit.
Mm-hmm.
But they turned us loose and...
So you had to, you jumped out?
No, we didn't jump out. We come down in the glider.
Okay.
And we landed, we found out from a little German boy that we were about 30 miles in Germany.
30 miles inside of Germany.
Germany, and we were supposed to be in Holland.
What were your feelings when you found out that you were inside of Germany?
Well, we didn't know. We were sitting around debating what we were going to do. And then the Germans surrounded us.
This was in a farmhouse, right?
Yeah, in a farmhouse. They surrounded us there. And, they loaded it up on a truck, pulled the shades down on it, and carried us to a camp.
I noticed in the book you said when they you were in the backyard of the farmhouse, right? And when the German soldiers surrounded you, but you took your gun apart and threw it in pieces.
I did.
That's pretty. I find that really like honorable and interesting. Like, I don't know if I would be that level-headed in that situation, where you were thinking, well, at least if they're going to take me, they're not going to take my gun. You know?
Yeah, and I wanted to. I knew they were going to take me, and I thought, I didn't want to. I wanted to mess that gun up so bad that they couldn't use it.
Exactly.
And
I think that's really indeed.
And I come out, and when I come out the farmhouse, well, they put me right in front of the line of us.
Mm-hmm.
And so they marched me down the road down there and backed me up against a tree.
Mm-hmm.
And this German officer come up there and he asked me where I was from. And I was so scared and shaking there, I couldn't say anything, you know. And he said to me again, he said, I'll ask you where you was at. And that time he caught the pistol, you know, and stuck it in my face.
Did you think that was it?
Yeah. And I said to him, Husband Bosworth, that was a town we were stationed at in England.
Mm-hmm.
Husband Bosworth. Well, about that time, there was a shot back there at the farmhouse. And so he turned around and went down there to see what that was, you know. And what they had done, they had shot the first sergeant and shot him through the chest. And it went through two boys behind him, his arms.
Mm-hmm.
It landed in the second boy's arm. So they put us in the line and marched us to a schoolhouse at night. We got there at the schoolhouse there, and we had a glider pilot with us, and that was the first experience he'd ever had in being in combat, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so a German officer coming around, and I done kind of got my senses, and it made me mad, you know, then on what to do.
Yeah.
So he come around looking at us, and he stared me in the eyes, you know, and I just stared him back just as hard as I could look. Yeah. And he turned around, and this officer was shaking like a leaf, and I punched him up, you know, straightened up.
This was the pilot?
They killed the sergeant. This officer was shaking like a leaf, and they reached up and snatched him out and kicked him out. We never did see him no more. I don't know what.
And that was the glider pilot?
Yeah, he was the pilot.
And so
they loaded us up on a truck and carried us to SS camp.
Mm-hmm. That was the Stalag?
Yeah. to know it, just the regular army camp for the soldiers, German soldiers.
Okay, that was the prisoner camp, yeah.
And they had all kind of beautiful girls out there for them SS troops.
Really?
To go in with them, you know, they wanted them all to get pregnant. Was basically blue-eyed.
Blue-eyed, blonde-haired, they were.
All right, well, went on to, they carried us after they had interrogated us, we carried us to a stalag. And we stayed there for 3 or 4 weeks, and they was, it was into a swastika hut. And all you could, there were so many in it, of British and American soldiers, prisoners, that all you could do was just squat down, sit down, lean up against each other, so many in it. And it rained every day. And you was lucky if you got a drink of water.
And that was for 3 or 4 weeks you did that?
And they, yeah, there's 3 or 4 weeks.
And what did you, when you got to the stalag, what was your feelings? Were you feeling, you know, it won't be too long until the Americans come and get us, or did you think that that's it?
I didn't know.
You didn't know?
Didn't know.
At that time?
Didn't know. No, nothing at that time. And we was hoping that they would. But
you were saying you were at the stalag. There were so many of you. You could only just squat down.
Yeah, just squat down. They'd leave, and then when they started to pull out there, well, they got all American prisoners, and we started marching them out the thing there, and they reached up and pulled me out of the ranks and made me march 600 prisoners to the train station.
And why do you think they picked you? Because you were...
Well, because I was blonde-headed and blue-eyed.
That's what... So you think that they...
I figured they was, you know...
Immediately went to you because they considered you a part of the master race.
The master race, I thought.
And you were a pretty big guy. You know, yeah, you're still a pretty big guy, so you're...
I was a big guy, and I played football in high school, and I was in good shape, and I'd been training and airborne and everything. And so that's the only reason I figured they pulled me out and put me in charge of. And I marched me down to the train station. Well, we got on the train, and we was 4 days and 5 nights, and going up above Berlin. Didn't have no water or no food. They did give us a fifth of a loaf of black bread. And that's all we had for the 4 days, 5 nights.
At this time, did you know anything about the concentration camps over there?
No, I didn't know anything about
it. They did the same thing with the Jewish people too, from the train. So yeah. I didn't know if you all knew that, if you thought that's what they were doing to you. But you didn't know about those?
No, I didn't know about the concentration camps. We didn't know about it till we got out.
Till the war, yeah. A lot of most people didn't, because they kept that pretty quiet.
Yeah, they didn't want nobody knowing about it.
But so you were on the train and you're going up there, and did they have you all crammed into the train too? Or
they put us in the train, and it had kind of a passenger car. You could sit 3 men on one side, and I like this table sitting there with 3 men on the other side.
Okay.
And in the car.
So it wasn't an empty box car. There was actually a seat.
Well, some of them was on the empty box car, but I happened to get a
passenger car.
Sitting there. And one of the boys made the mistake of throwing a piece of his train and stopped, threw a piece of trash out. Did this German judge haul off his shot right between all the six of us, you know.
Really?
So you're in Dutchland now, so you don't throw trash out there. And then the mother throwing any more trash out there.
Did he shoot anybody, or he just shot?
Shot through the door.
Okay.
But he didn't, between all of us.
He didn't hit anyone then?
No, he didn't.
So?
And then we went on up there, and we got the stalag, and I can't remember where it's 2A or 12A. I believe it's 2A.
The 2A, the Stalag 2A, yeah. So.
And that was up above Berlin, up near Rostock.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then we went to work on the railroads, and the rest of it is more or less account of in that book.
Is that when you got to that Stalag, the 2A, is that when you saw the Russian prisoners too? They were throwing cigarettes to you?
Yeah, and that was when we first got there, they threw a cigarette. And they shot one or two of them, killed them, you know.
For throwing cigarettes to you?
For throwing cigarettes over there too. And I picked up enough cigarettes, I smoked at the time,
mm-hmm.
that I just take a drag off of one and duck it.
Mm-hmm.
And it lasted me all the time, the 9 months I was in prison there.
They lasted the whole time?
Yeah. And all I do, when I really want one, I take a drag off of it and duck it and stick it back in my pocket.
So the whole 9 months, the cigarettes that you got from the Russian prisoners lasted you the whole time?
Yeah, stayed with me the whole time.
Really?
Some of the rest of the boys that got... We got in the barracks that we was in, they had some old tobacco hanging in the next room there to mm-hmm. it. And we got the littlest paratrooper we could got and pulled the board loose where he could squeeze through it. And Dan got some of that old tobacco and handed it out there, you know, and each board get some of it every night. And they smoked that old.
So when you got to your, so you were in the Stalag, the first one, the 2A, and then how did it go from there to where you ended up in the work camp, the 311I?
Well, state that again. How did that?
Well, you were in the Stalag there with the Russians.
Yeah.
And then from there you moved on to the final work camp, right? The 311I. How did that happen? How did you get picked for that?
311I was a work detail out of Stalag 2A.
Okay.
And we worked up there. They taken all the paratroopers that was in there at that time and sent them out on this work detail because they wanted to get us away from the regular army. And they thought we was kind of like the SS troop.
Yeah.
And we'd caused a lot of trouble, you know.
Boy. Mm-hmm.
And they sent us out on a work detail up there. The name of the work detail was 311-I.
Okay.
And we worked it up there all the time till the war was ended.
Now, you were chosen as the leader. You said, well, obviously, you think the Germans did it because you were big and blonde-haired and blue-eyed and everything. Now, that had to be kind of a sweet and sour deal because some of the people got, if they appealed to the Germans would give them special privileges, right? But then at the same time, some of the people that were chosen as the leaders of the troops were really hated by the guys, weren't they? Because they would come down on them and even worse sometimes than the Germans would.
Oh, yeah.
And but from reading your book, you didn't do that at all. What was your thought when you had to take that responsibility? What did you tell yourself that you were going to do? Because you seemed like you took the path of, I'm going to stand up for these guys. I'm not going to belittle them.
All them boys, paratroopers, was 17, 18-year-old kids.
Yeah. And you were...
And I was 26 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And they all respected me and did whatever I, requested of them. And we got along fine. I take the same amount of food that they paid.
Mm-hmm.
I really thought
one of the most interesting parts in the book that I found was when you... because the guys were fighting amongst themselves.
Yeah.
People were taking food from each other and everything like that. Did anyone ever take anything from you?
No, they never take anything from me. They, they was up until after Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
They was squabbling and everything else, you know. I don't know what I said in the book, but there was 12 prisoners. It was in the bakery, up over the bakery. One of those bakery boys come over there at Christmas time and wanted to know if we wanted to read the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked all of them, I said, I want to read it. Us to read the Bible, and they said, oh yeah, there's an old boy to them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he read his Bible. He had one of those little issues.
The little Bible. Green ones that they issued?
Had one. He's the only one that had one. And I'd have had one, I'd have had one else. I guess we throw them away, I don't know what.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, he read that Bible. And from that very day forward, they started getting together. And helping out each other and taking anything they could get and dividing it with them.
How important was God to you? And was that really important to you guys over there? Where you were, I shouldn't ask how important was God. What got you through the days over there when you were in the work camp? I mean, what was your... How did you survive it? Because after a couple of months, you had to have thought maybe you weren't ever going to get out of there.
Well, there was a lot of them felt that way, but most of them, they began to, I don't know, you can't get American spirit down.
Yes.
As far as that goes, and they kept your spirits up. And
You say that in the book, or the part where one of the guys have been fighting, and you... You called a meeting with the guy for the Bible, with the guy that came over and did the Bible reading, and he told everybody, he said, that, hey, you know.
Yeah, I told him, I said, you could either, y'all, they can stand up for each other and fight this thing, or we're all going to go to the dogs. In other words, that's what went down.
So did you think... What were you thinking while you were in the work camp? Did you think maybe, did they try to make you think that America was losing the war?
Yes. Yeah, when the Battle of the Buds come on,
mm-hmm.
they come in bragging and everything about they was going to soon be, war was soon be over, because they were going to whip the Americans and everything.
And what did you think about your family back here and everything?
My family.
Yeah, how did you? Were you worried about them?
No, I wasn't worried about my family for that. That was what I felt like, you know. But they were back in the United States,
mm-hmm.
and they were rough on them back then, but they were surviving it.
So right. you didn't think that the Germany was
no.
They obviously you don't never you dreamed. Never bought into it.
That no, I didn't dream of them.
So the general feeling between you and your guys, Chasteen and Jones and Turner and Dupree, that's what I want. What did you feel when I believe it was Jones, Dupree, and Turner, when they escaped?
Yeah.
But then when they got captured and brought back,
yeah.
Did you think that, man, there's no way we're getting out of here? Or?
Well, no, I didn't. No, I felt like... we could survive it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, eventually, the Americans win the war.
We're going to win.
I didn't know when or how long it'd take, because I was thinking, you know, when I was captured, oh, it'd be just a few days, you know, it'd be over with. But it wasn't.
So you never really, I think that's really interesting that everybody, it seemed like a lot of you had that strong, centered belief America was going to see it through, and you just had to ride it out.
You just had to ride it out. That's all the way we felt about it. And
now, were there any guys that kind of went crazy and didn't believe in that?
Well, there was two guys, and I can't think of the name right now. That will come to me some of them. But two of them, they were in the same outfit in back when they were paratroopers. And they wouldn't take any part in religious service, and they were just miserable. And they were just miserable right up through the end of the war. And they left from the end of the war, and I never been able to contact them.
Really?
And I've talked to several other paratroopers, and they don't know what happened to them. They don't know where they went to, back towards Russia or what, which way they went.
That was the two guys that, that when you all were finally, when the Russians were taken over and the Germans left.
Yeah.
That when you guys got to the Russian line, those two guys turned and went back, right?
Yeah.
Is that who you're talking about?
Yeah, at the end of the war.
Lindsay and...
Lindsay had one of them, and I can't think of what the other one name is. Lindsay.
So those guys, you know, they decided they were going to go back to where you just came from. That must have been...
I don't know what. They left us. You know, we was marching back towards American lines there, and they left us. Of course, we were, when we was coming out there, were we picking up prisoners all along from each town as far as that goes. They were joining us, and we had a big crowd of us come walking out of there. Coming out.
Now, going back to the work camp, what was it like when they would put you on those trains to take you out to work on the railroad and everything, and the German people and kids, and especially, it seemed like, especially the women were really, like, just hateful to you guys.
Yes. When we first got captured, they loaded us up on the train, or train station there, two loaders up on it. And the women come out there and spit on us and everything else like that. And finally a German soldier made them quit back off like that.
Did you think that was strange that the soldier was telling the civilians that, and they were women, which, you know, back then, you know, they, you wouldn't have pictured the women to be coming up to a soldier and spitting on them.
No.
Was that really shocking to you?
Well, yes, it was. We didn't dream that, you know, that we could understand maybe a soldier spitting on you. We couldn't understand why the civilian women would come around and spit on you.
Yeah.
And of course, you didn't know what they were saying, because you did not know what about language.
Did you pick up some German while you were captured?
Yeah, a little bit, very little.
Did that help you out, do you think?
I don't know what it did at all. Like Venus A, Prima. And Prima was real good.
And
things like that, you know. But just a few words what we picked up. Didn't try to learn very much. Yeah.
Now, did any of the German guards, the soldiers that looked over your camp and looked over your camp or your particular work party, did you befriend any of those? Did you become like not friends, of course, but like?
Well, yes, there was one guard when the thing was over, but he was not a German. And he was he'd been drafted by the German.
Really?
And. Well, I think he was from, I don't know which one of the countries it was, Austria or someplace over there. And so he come there, was our guard, just a few weeks before we was liberated. And he treated us real well over that door. And so we give him, when we come marching out of that, we give him some part of our uniform, so he'd come out with us. And we got there, well, we turned him over to the authorities, American authorities, you know. Because he wanted to be captured by Americans.
Not the Russians.
Not the Russians. So he had done us a favor like that, so we felt like we could do him a favor back then. Getting back to America.
Now, what was the most horrifying or the worst part of your imprisonment, your experience as a POW? What was the lowest point where you, what was just the worst part of it for you?
Well, I'd say the first 3 weeks that we was in the Stalag, where we had to sit shoulder to shoulder, and couldn't get no clean water to drink. If you was lucky, you got some. They turned it on for an hour, for 600 men and over one that day, and you was lucky if you got a drink of water. I consider that about the worst that we was, and they didn't have very little to eat. They give us a piece of fifth of a loaf of bread, and that was supposed to last you a week. On that black bread.
Now, what was the on the other side of that? What was the high point of your? And obviously there wasn't a very, but I mean, what was probably the point that stands out in your mind of the time that you were in prison that was like your fondest memory? Obviously, I guess it would be the day you got liberated, but aside from that, what was, one day in particular, was there?
Well, I think one day in particular, we was marching out, and we come to this town, and so it got getting dark on us. And so we divided up and this subdivision, and we had a couple of POWs stay in each one of the houses. So me and one boy, we picked a house and stopped there, and they had a young girl there. It was a teenage girl. And so he and I was there, and a Russian come up there and demanded that girl. She come down, and we were sleeping in the floor, and they was upstairs. And they come, and the Russians come in and got him. The girl to come down, and they was going to take her with her. And we got up and we stood the Russian down, told him no, that was our girlfriend. And so we backed him down. He was going to take her out, and we knew he was going to take her and rape her. And so we told him no, we weren't going to do it. And we backed him down, and we got some satisfaction out of that. And we the next morning, this German family got up and fixed us some coffee and everything, and just treated us so nice that she ever seen, So when we started to leave there, we told her to get a pillar, stick it up under her dress, show she was pregnant.
They would leave her alone then?
And they would leave her alone. So we left her like that, and we don't know what happened to her or anything like that.
What was the worst part of your entire experience in combat? What was the worst, just the thing that you maybe saw or experienced or heard of that just really, was just really horrifying for you or appalling?
I don't know.
Did you do things that you thought, to yourself, I can't believe that I never thought I'd ever do that, as far as, because it seems like in the history of soldiers and battles and everything, when you're getting shot at and everything, things are going on, you might do something that you never thought you were capable of doing.
I never felt that way about it, man. I don't know. I felt like defending myself best I could, but I felt like also the Germans was under command too. And
they were doing
the same thing that I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to kill them and they were trying to kill me. So
Did you ever experience like any close combat, you know, very?
Other than when I was captured, I had my rifle and I drove it to the German soldiers walking down the streets there in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
And I've taken the gun up and just trained it all along there. And it got along about evening. I was going to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
And something told me no. I said, you don't want, I ain't no use to do that. I says, we're going to get captured anyway. So there's 30 miles behind the line or something like that.
Yep.
So take the gun away from them and beat it up inside the house, you know, to come out like that. I couldn't make myself just shoot him in cold blood.
Yeah, yeah. That would be, I would imagine that happened to a lot of the guys, you know,
because
yeah. You realized that they were, you know, the same.
Yeah, it's
now when you, so after you got, after the one guard that came and said that the Russians were coming and that all the Germans had fled and you guys were locked in your makeshift barracks for like a day, weren't you, until you got out of there and
yeah.
And started out for
walking.
Walking for the American lines.
Yeah.
Now when you finally got there and got back into, you know, the Jeep or, you know, the US troop carrier, I remember one of the guys said, you know, I think it was Chasteen. He said he heard the grinding of the gears and knew it had to be an American Jeep or a troop carrier. Was that just, you know, that had to be, I'm sure, probably the best thing you'd heard in 9 months for sure.
Oh, yeah. Grinding them gears. You knew it was American.
What experiences or what do you think you took from being a prisoner of war for 9 months? What do you think you, I don't want to use the word gained, because I don't, but I mean, what do you think, how did it change you as a person?
Well, I don't really know. The truth, it learned me to be patient.
Did it bug you when you got back to America and people would, you know, complain about being in a line or not being able to get a big enough steak or something like that? Did that kind of, you know, get under your skin a little bit?
Yeah, get under my skin a little bit, you know. Especially, it would run across boys here who was in the Army but never went overseas, never went to anything else. And to hear him tell it, well, they won the war to sell.
Yeah.
And you usually didn't, and that kind of burnt you up.
Yeah. Did you ever, you know, say something to somebody when you were back in the States, if, you know, if they were saying, you know, complaining about something, did you ever say, hey, you know, you need to be thankful for what you
tell them? Sometimes it gets so that you just had to speak out, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you, what were your thoughts when FDR died and Truman took over? Because you found out President Roosevelt died while you were a prisoner. Did that make you think that the war might be changing, that the Germans might gain any ground or anything?
No, you're talking about Battle of the Buzz.
No, when President Roosevelt died.
Oh yeah.
Did the Germans try to
brag about that? We told them. I said that don't matter about him. I said there's another person to take over.
Yeah.
This is an editor's note. End of tape A, side one. The interview continues on tape A, side two.
They had another person to take over.
Yep.
So I tell you, they couldn't understand it, you know.
What were your feelings of President Roosevelt? Did you think he did a good job?
Yeah, I thought he'd done a good job, through the Depression and everything else like that. And most people at that time worshipped him, most, you know, Americans.
Yep.
And I thought he was the it, you know.
Yep.
Well, he stopped them taking charge of the money situation and everything and got.
Now, when y'all were, when you were over there in Germany, a prisoner, did you know of anything that was going on in Japan? Did you know anything about what was going on in the Pacific?
No. They told us we got through it. They sent us to Japan over there. So we heard that, you know, that we got through over Germany, but the war wasn't over in Japan, some of us would be sent over there.
Were you worried you were going to get sent over to Japan?
Was I what?
Were you worried you were going to get sent to Japan, or?
No, I wasn't worried. I didn't figure that.
So after you got back to the American lines, how much longer were you over there?
I wasn't over there too much longer. I left and they sent all the prisoners of war that they gathered up. They sent them up to the boats in France.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I went to 130th General Hospital where my wife was.
Where your wife was.
And I went there, and so I stayed there a couple of weeks. And
were you
they fed me.
Were you a patient there for a couple of weeks?
Yes, they entered me as a patient.
Mm-hmm.
And they shipped me out of there and sent me to Paris, France.
Mm-hmm.
And I stayed there about a week or 2 weeks. Well, my wife come to Paris.
Mm-hmm.
I'd done business with her about 2 weeks there in camp. And she come to France, and they had her colonel had dismissed her, let her come home.
Mm-hmm.
And so I met her in France. We spent one afternoon together, and I caught the subway to the hospital, and I didn't know how far I'd go and when. But I got off the subway and I had to walk about half a mile to the private hospital because I couldn't speak French or anything like that. They shipped her out to England and they sent me down to Casablanca and I caught the boat to come into New York.
Okay.
She was already in the States or down here in Florida to come home.
Mm-hmm.
She beat me home. And
so then you came back to New York and then you were discharged?
No, I went over to Daytona Beach.
Okay.
And I got the discharge from Daytona Beach.
So how long after you, how long was it from when you became, you know, liberated, when you got to the American lines to when you were discharged? Six months.
That was in May.
Mm-hmm.
And I come home, I think, in July.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it was May of 44 when you got out of the prisoner camp? Or May of 45?
45.
May of 45.
May of 45. Okay.
And you were there
drafted in 42 and got out in 45.
Yep.
And they shipped her up to Augusta, Georgia.
How long was she in Georgia for?
And, well, she was home when I got home.
Mm-hmm.
And her furlough was up. She went up to Moultrie, Georgia. I mean, not Moultrie, but Augusta, Georgia, I believe it is. Mm-hmm. And she was there, and I went up to see her one time and come back, and while I was up there, VJ Day called. Now, if you remember when VJ Day was.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's a victory of...
Was that in July?
It might have been, maybe in August.
Maybe August.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe August. Anyway, well, that's when it was over. We'd walk downtown to the restaurant down there, and the town went wild on VJ Day. So we had to walk about a mile and a half, 2 miles, back to the hotel. We got there. We went in, and I said, let's go in here and get us something to drink before we go to bed, you know. Went in there, and there's an old boy that was a paratrooper. Oh, he's a macho man, you know. And he'd been whooping and hollering all the time, but he was out of the 13th Airborne, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And so we stopped in there to get something to drink, and he come over there and flirting with my wife, and nursey, this, that, and that. And so I was weak, you know, I knew I was. So I turned around like that, you know, was I was going to come up to him, and I was going to hit him with everything that I had, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he seen that 82nd insignia,
mm-hmm.
And he didn't apologize. And I told him, I said, all right, just going back over to your buddies over there. And he did.
Mm-hmm.
Saved me to get whipped.
So, I mean, you have a unique experience being a prisoner of war, but did you regret, you know, your being in the war at all?
No, I you learn a lot before that goes, before you want it or not. But
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't go back to it for love of money.
But. Oh yeah. But you seem to have a, you know, even while you were there and now, you seem to have a really, like you were able to look back and see the big picture, and really it was, they did a good job picking you as the leader, because you seemed like you really knew how to get those, that rally the guys behind when you mm-hmm. grabbed them all up. And
it all started from them Germans picking me to live now. And mm-hmm. so when we got to the Stalag, the Germans told them they had to pick a leader. But mm-hmm. all the boys says, Herbert, you're the leader. They didn't question me.
Mm-hmm. So it was,
I couldn't refuse them after all of them, you know.
Yep. But now it seems like you really, like, you had the ability to bring them all together, because really it seemed... When the one guy from the bakery came over, like you were saying, with the Bible and everything, but what you said in there was, your quote in there where you said, hey, we've got to do something about these krauts.
Yeah.
You said, we're paratroopers, they're scared of us, and we need to start, you know.
Start.
Gaining some ground on them. And you guys really did, I think it was really neat how you... slowed your work down.
Every one of them fell in behind me, man. They quit fighting amongst themselves and fighting amongst the Germans. You know, and the chance they get.
And you keep in touch with some of those guys to this day, right?
Kept in touch with them. Dan Jones passed away, and Polaski, he passed away.
Mm-hmm.
But there very few of them left except me. Mm-hmm. I was the oldest one I've ever met. Yes, makes us kind of scary.
Well, so, when was the last time all of you got together?
Oh, it's been about 4 years now.
4 years, okay. And was it a good group? Is that what the picture in there is?
Yeah, that was, I think that. How many is in that book signed right there?
It's,
That was. That's when they first got together. Yeah.
That was when you first got together?
Yeah. That's about the largest crew we ever got together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That had to be a pretty emotional reunion, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Seeing all those guys.
Yeah. Well, in fact, but as we left down there, I didn't care if I ever seen them myself again, but when we met a guy there, it was just like meeting your brother again.
Mm-hmm.
It's a family.
So,